Imagine you're alone, at home. You look out the window and realise it's dark. What was that? And that? Oh, it's only a door creaking open. It must have been the wind. Phew. Fear can get to us all in a variety of different ways, be it a haunted house, a tandem skydive, or even an intimidating social situation. So what can science tell us about this eerie emotion? And does fear really deserve its frightful reputation? Emma Cahill is a fear expert who lectures in neurophysiology at Cambridge University. So I spoke to her about the science of fear.
We've got so many words for being afraid, you know, the heebie-jeebies and lots of different expressions. So it's not 100% clear in terms of language. But when you get into the lab, what we try to do is separate it out based on how obvious the threat is. So if something is uncertain and a bit ambiguous, it might lead to a state of anxiety, which is kind of long and chronic. If it's an obvious threat, that can have an acute response, which is fear. Fear is sort of two things at once. You have the bodily response to fear. You get the kind of heart racing, dizziness. Maybe your muscles tense up. You can even feel a bit nauseous. And that's all down to what we call the autonomic nervous system. But you also have the thinking side of fear. These thoughts, they can be maybe a bit catastrophic or thinking of worst case scenarios. And that kicks off as well. And that's really what's controlled in the brain. Typically, when people are asked about what areas of the brain are used for fear, everyone jumps and says the amygdala, which is a small region shaped like an almond. But actually, there's a lot of different circuits involved. So you need your amygdala to basically learn about what things you should be afraid of. And it can also control that autonomic system from outputs it has down through your brainstem and out to the body. So it's a big, complicated mass of circuits. And there's no one region which is responsible for everything, but your amygdala clearly is a very important one.
Are we innately scared of things, or do we have to learn to be scared of things?
A bit of both. You're more likely to be afraid of certain things, and that might be because we've been wired to be very easily programmed to be afraid, for example, of things like heights, which is a very common fear in humans, and that has a clear evolutionary advantage that you wouldn't go climbing up and falling off trees or anything.
So could you say the same thing about the dark, maybe? So don't leave your cave at night because you might get eaten.
Exactly, yeah. If you do have that sort of worry, you get sort of primed, so you're kind of on edge. And I think everyone has had this at home. If you've been watching a horror film, you switch it off, and then you hear something creak in the kitchen. You way overreact than you normally would if it was the middle of the day. And that's a type of learning as well. That's called priming. You're not aware of it necessarily happening, but it kicks in and it can make you form or even predict associations that aren't there. So it might just be that your cat has bumped into something in the kitchen and that's what the noise was. So you can definitely have learned fears as well. A lot of things that we try to study in the lab is that sort of artificial fear learning, where we try and couple a stimulus like a noise to something aversive. So it could be a loud bang or a puff of air. So that's associative learning. And that's a nice way to try and study how learned fear is acquired. Like most kind of emotional systems in the brain, fear is used to predict what's going to happen in your environment. And that's why I'm interested in it, because I'm interested in memory. And memory is just something used to predict things. So like an everyday example would be, it's good to be afraid in Cambridge of leaving your bike unlocked. Because if you weren't, you're probably going to lose it. And then you're going to have to walk around. If you were too afraid of ever losing your bike, that you never use it and you leave it in a garage, so then there's no point in having it. So it's a balance. And I think that's an example of everyday situations. It's good to be a little bit fearful. I mean, who doesn't enjoy like a good, you know, horror movie around Halloween as well? It can get your system going and that feeling alive. It's not just there to be a pest to us.
I'm a massive wuss, by the way. But when I watch horror movies or read scary stories and then go to bed, my imagination runs riot. Mm-hmm. Why do we just invent all of these ridiculous scenarios, which in the light of day seem ridiculous?
Well, my answer might be less neuroscience-y at this point, but I think some of the ideas about why we tell ourselves scary stories and make up these horrible situations is to sort of maybe prime ourselves and help us be used to something negative ever happening. One of the jobs of memory in general is to predict what's going to happen to you in the future, if you know what normally happens. So I think in horror movies, a lot of the time, it's a balance between something being, you know, fantasy or sort of just slightly possible. So maybe it stretches what you think you should actually predict. And that uncomfortable kind of fancy word would be cognitive dissonance or something. So you kind of feel like, oh, do I really know what's going to happen? And I think it's that sort of unsettling that makes our minds race and try to make logical sense of what would actually happen. And, you know, okay, that cortex kicks in and says, right, I'd be able to handle this because I would not run upstairs in the horror movie. I would go out the front door. You know, you can get away from the cliches and plan your exit. So if ever anything did happen, you feel like you're prepared. I would guess that's part of what the brain is doing.
Don't go down into the creepy cellar and turn the light on.
Exactly.
Or maybe just don't go into the old sinister looking house in the first place. Emma Cahill there from Cambridge University.